tomorrow lunchtime from 1 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Well, a very good afternoon to you. This is Ian Skelly here to guide you throughout the afternoon today on Radio 3, which continues in just a moment with a profile of the European Union Baroque Orchestra, 25 years old this year. Music by Schmeitzer, William Corbett and Bach. All in a couple of minutes after a summer of the news with the time at 1 o'clock. It's read by David Cornett.
The Liberal Democrat MP has insisted that his Russian parliamentary researcher is not a spy. Mike Hancock confirmed that the woman, Katya Zatulaveta, had been detained and was facing deportation, but he said she would be appealing. According to the Sunday Times, she was arrested on suspicion of espionage on the orders of the security service, MI5. Iran has said it'll start using domestically produced uranium at one of its nuclear plants for the first time today. The uranium ore concentrate, known as yellow cake, was mined in the south of the country. Tehran's chief nuclear scientist said Iran was now self-sufficient across the entire nuclear fuel cycle. The government has confirmed that it's proposing sweeping changes to the planning system, which would allow people to make major alterations to their homes without having to apply to local councils. The reforms, which would affect England and Wales, will feature in the forthcoming localism bill. Thousands of people who are stranded in Spain because of a walkout by air traffic controllers are trying to get home. Most of the strikers went back to work yesterday, but passengers have been warned still to expect delays. The lawyer representing the founder of the WikiLeaks website, Julian Assange, has said the issuing of a warrant for his extradition to Sweden on allegations of sex offences is a political stunt. Mark Stevens said Mr. Assange would fight the moves to deport him from Britain. The Israeli authorities now say they're cautiously optimistic about bringing the huge forest fire in the north of the country under control. It had been thought that the blaze, in which at least 40 people have died, will take a week to put out. A spokesman for the Israeli firefighters said they now hoped to have contained the main fire by tonight. And the weather, it'll be a mainly dry afternoon with some sunny spells, and any rain in the south of England will ease off. However, there will be more snow in northern Scotland and wintry showers in coastal areas. Later, the temperatures will drop again and there'll be icy conditions overnight in many places. BBC News and weather at approaching 3 minutes past one.
David, thank you very much. E.T.A. Hoffmann's writings and ideas had a powerful impact on the music of his time. Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker is one big example. Well, this afternoon on Radio 3, you can hear how his influence made its way into a range of music when Stephen Johnson joins the BBC Concert Orchestra for this week's Discovering Music. That's at 5. But now we join Lucy Skeeping for the Early Music Show.
The European Union, love it or hate it, it certainly made things a lot easier for us touring musicians in a practical way. But for those who still find the whole concept unsettling, one particularly worthwhile Euro enterprise should bring a warm glow: the European Union Baroque Orchestra. Founded in 1985, the EUBO, or UBO, has grown to become a truly multinational operation, its young players representing just about every corner of Europe. Auditions are tough, but those who make it can look forward to one of the most exciting years of their professional lives. Today's Early Music Show marks their 25th anniversary, and we'll be hearing from their current musical director, Lars Ulrik Mortensen, who I spoke to a few weeks ago from a studio in Denmark. First, though, something from their very first recording, made in 1991 under a former director, Roy Goodman. It's part of a collection of concertos by Englishman William Corbett. Each piece represents a different national style, and the one we'll hear is Alla Romana, representing Rome, and it certainly owes quite a bit to that city's most celebrated composer of the 18th century, Corelli.
Thank you.
Alla Romana by William Corbett from his Concerti collection published in 1728, Bizzarri Universali. The European Union Baroque Orchestra, directed by Roy Goodman. And incidentally, that piece can be heard on the telephone system at the European Parliament in Brussels and in Strasbourg. Since 2004, the EUBO's musical director has been the Danish harpsichordist Lars Ulrik Mortensen, and he's well aware of how hard it is for young players to get a foothold in the profession and how the experience in the orchestra can help them both musically and, of course, when it comes to that all-important business of networking. He explained to me that membership is renewed each year via a rigorous audition process, and along with a packed schedule of rehearsals and concert tours, the players from right across Europe can get to know each other and share musical ideas. So is this friendship among nations all part of the orchestra's philosophy?
Well, that's one of the elements. The EUBO is a Baroque orchestra touring on the international concert circuit. But the difference to most other Baroque orchestras is that it's also a training initiative. When you specialize in historic instruments, performance practice, and choose that direction, after your studies, your possibilities of employment are slightly different from the ones who would have applied had you chosen a more traditional instrument. Because a lot of work, in fact, most of the work in the early music field is much less organized than in the more traditional direction. There are much fewer permanent positions, much more of the work is project orientated. And that creates a special set of challenges for people choosing this direction. Also because, of course, how do you then get into this circuit, the early music life? You need to prove experience. And you need to have a lot of contacts in order to get enough offers. But in the catch-22, if you haven't done it before, how do you get experience? And how do you establish the contacts which are so important for your future possibilities? And this is where UBO steps in as a kind of bridge, creating experience, enabling you later then to go out and say, well, I have done that for half a year. And in most orchestras' books, that is a very good activity to have done. But then, of course, also, it is about harmony of nations. We recruit from, as the name implies, from all over the European Union, meaning that we have 20-something countries to choose from.
And now, and getting larger.
And getting larger, indeed, which is also what we feel in the nationality of applicants who would like to join us. And that, of course, is a very exciting development, also for me as a musical director, because it keeps me, so to speak, on the ball. I keep getting information and actually meeting the upcoming generation of early music. And that, of course, is very exciting and also very important for me.
Lars Ulrik Mortensen, director of the European Union Baroque Orchestra. So let's hear them now under his baton in an orchestral suite by Bach, taken from the first disc he recorded with them. The concept of a suite actually came from France, where composers would put together a series of favourite dances, usually from some popular opera or ballet of the time. Bach's audiences wouldn't have expected to leave their seats for a quick shimmy around the dance floor, of course, but they certainly would have appreciated the different characteristics of each dance, and the more seriously minded among them would also have relished his impressive overture with its pointed French rhythms and lively fugue.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
a passepied, ending Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 1, the European Union Baroque Orchestra, directed from the harpsichord by Lars Ulrik Mortensen. Mortensen's role involves every aspect of the EUBO, from planning and training to conducting. And with a whole new set of young players every 12 months and at least four new projects happening in different parts of Europe all through the year, it's not so much about continuity as getting the very best out of the collection of players that he has at any one time. And it's all as full on for him as it is for any of them, with 8-hour rehearsal days and constant touring from one concert hall to another. I wondered about the repertoire, with longer rehearsal periods than most professional orchestras would ever get. Can they perhaps indulge in some of the more tricky or even less familiar areas of the repertoire?
That is also a very important element, of course, of my function, is to choose repertoire, or rather repertoires, groups of repertoire, which represent a lot of different philosophies. We need to have well-known music for certain concert organisers who prefer that. But we can also go more exotic. We can choose less familiar repertoire, or we can make programs with a theme. This year, for instance, we have a program called Maladies and Melodies, which is basically about the healing power of music, where we have chosen pieces of that theme from a variety of stylistic fields and times. And that is also a slightly more exotic way of programming that definitely appeals to the young people as well as to me, of course.
I did wonder about the style of playing. I mean, these days, you know, there is, I suppose, certainly a more of a uniform style, particularly in Baroque, because so many people travel and so many people learn in the various conservatoires all over Europe, if not all over the world. But do you notice, even now, a bit of a stylistic difference between the different nationalities?
I'm often being asked that question, and I have always trouble answering it, because even though one might possibly expect that there would be a great stylistic difference between, for instance, how the Italian players attack a piece of music compared with the Swedish ones, I think that the differences in approach and style has to do with a lot of other things than pure nationality. But one thing that cannot be questioned is that the general level of technical and musical ability these days compared to, for instance, 20 years ago, is much, much higher. And that, of course, is a reflection of the fact you mentioned that early music is now being offered as a regular curriculum in most academies in Europe. That having been said, it is still so, and I experience that very strongly, that each year, with a different selection of people, the focus changes. And it is my very challenging and hopefully also rewarding job to try always to make the best out of the selection that we have this year. You know, the sound of the orchestra change every year depending on the people who play in it.
Lars Ulrik Mortensen. OK, let's hear some more music, this time from a recording the orchestra made back in the early 90s under the direction of Monika Huggett. The composer is Johann Heinrich Schmelzer, son of a baker who came from that home of all things sweet and chocolatey, Vienna. And if you can drag yourself past all the Sackertort and the designer shops, the city's other great tourist attraction is, of course, St. Stephen's Cathedral, where Schmelzer began his career as a cornet player. He went on to become Kapellmeister at the Imperial Court. And the piece we'll hear now portrays that most noble of pastimes, fencing. The moves, the lunges, the parries, they're all imitated by the bow of the first violin, as the player literally does battle with a fiendish solo part.
Thank you.
Fechtschule, or fencing school, a suite by Schmelzer, performed by the European Union Baroque Orchestra, directed from the violin by Monica Huggett. The players are selected from the most talented students from all over Europe, and then they spend a total of 3 months training under some of the Baroque world's finest musicians. I asked Lars Ulrich about some of the orchestra's previous directors.
Roy Goodman was my predecessor as musical director, and we generally tend each year to make the music director do one or two tours, and then we ask a range of important personalities from all over the early music scene to act as guest directors. We have used Monica Huggett, we have used Ton Koopman, we have used Enrico Onofrio, Alfredo Bernardini. In fact, there are not that many of today's important directors who has not at one time or the other been asked to be musical directors of UBO either.
And when you have your guest directors, are you nevertheless sort of overseeing it all and working out programmes for them and so on?
Well, of course, programme planning is something very important, and that is, of course, an area that I have to be involved in all the time. But other than that, I tend not at all to interfere in the work of the other guest directors, because that is also a very important aspect of UBO, that it needs to show the young players that there is not one approach to early music or to all the musical and artistic questions that you meet there, but that it's immeasurably more challenging and more rewarding to be presented with a range of possibilities, a range of different approaches, and a range of different end goals.
I noticed in one of the photographs of your orchestra, in fact, the one that's in the Lufthansa Festival programme, that you have rather an unusual seating plan with the violins in the centre. Is this something you always do, or is it just for certain concerts and certain repertoires?
No, it is not. This particular concert was indeed the repertoire from that was based on the massed performances with many players two apart that we know took place in Rome around 1700, often under the direction of Corelli. And we have quite a lot of iconographic evidence from that, which clearly shows that the violins were playing in ranks. And the continuo group, often with a lot of players, several harpsichords, several organs, lots of lutes, and also the string basses were then placed center in the front, so that the energy of the whole thing actually sort of radiates out from the front center.
So that's cleared that up. Well, we're going to end today's programme with music by Handel from a concert given by the EUBO at St John Smith Square in London, and with the seating arrangement just as Lars Ulrich described. It was part of the 2010 Lufthansa Festival, and on this occasion they were directed from the violin by Enrico Onofri in a piece dating from the very outset of Handel's career when he was studying in Rome. It's entitled Sonata a Cinque, in other words, in five equal parts. But actually it feels more like a violin concerto, probably written for Corelli to perform, and stylistically it certainly seems to look forward to some of the great violin concerti that, say, Vivaldi would present to the public just a few years later.
That was Handel's Sonata a Cinque in B-flat, performed by the European Union Baroque Orchestra, directed by Enrico Onofri. And that was recorded at their concert from the Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music earlier this year. The early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping, and Lucy will be here again in next Saturday's programme with highlights from another Lufthansa Festival concert, also featuring Enrico Onofri, this time with the ensemble Imaginarium. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news on Saturday lunchtime here on BBC Radio 3. Incidentally, our composer of the week this coming week is André Campra. Donald MacLeod is going to be joined by the musicologist, harpsichordist and conductor William Christie for a series of programmes marking the 350th anniversary of André Campra's birth. You can hear the first instalment tomorrow lunchtime at midday or at 10 o'clock in the evening here on BBC Radio 3.
From the dances that made Dvorak's name to Prokofiev's First Symphony, a magical mystery tour through the world of his musical forefathers. Performance on 3 at Manchester's Bridgewater Hall with the Halle Orchestra and Sir Mark Elder. Tuesday night at 7 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
Should be a thrilling concert. Tomorrow night's performance on 3, by the way, is given by the Britten Symphonia. The soprano Barbara Hannigan joins the orchestra to perform Georges Ligeti's Mysteries of the Macabre. Also on the bill, Rossini, his overture to The Silken Ladder, arias by Mozart, and a concertino for horn by Weber with the horn player Richard Watkins. Ryan Wigglesworth conducts, all from 7 o'clock tomorrow night here on Radio 3. Well, a very good afternoon to you. It's just after 2 o'clock now, and next this afternoon, Fiona Talkington is your host for the next couple of hours, in fact, with more letters, calls and emails containing your Radio 3 requests.
Hello again. Some rarely heard smetana to begin today at the suggestion of Catherine Stevenson from Cardiff. This is the overture to Smetana's comic opera, The Secret. Gian Andrea Noseda conducts the BBC Philharmonic. It's a pity Smetana's music is widely unknown, apart from Mother Last, says Catherine Stevenson, who wants to hear something else by Smetana. So we chose his overture to his opera, The Secret. Gianandrea Noseda conducted the BBC Philharmonic. Andy Cordy is a man after my own heart. I struggle to understand what all the fuss is about Delius, writes Andy. Andy, I've never got it with Delius either. And what am I about to do? Play some Delius. But Andy discovered, while reading about the pianist Noriko Ogawa, that she'd done some duets with Catherine Stott of transcriptions of Delius made by his great champion, Peter Warlock. Andy's hoping to get a different insight through the ears of Warlock and the hands of these two fine performers. Who knows, says Andy, I may even buy the CD if I like it. So let's put Delius to the test. His Dance Rhapsody No. 1, transcribed by Peter Warlock and played by Noriko Ogawa and Catherine Stott.